Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today I'm going to hit you with one that I think for some of you, it's going to ring in your head for a long time. Maybe even a lifetime. I'm not exactly sure what to call this. If I change the name, forgive me. In my brain right now, I'm calling this the intelligence threshold. Now, if you're new to this show, our definition of intelligence is never represented on the show Jeopardy. Our version of intelligence has to do with the very basic form of thinking, deducing, connecting, deriving, and perhaps leading all that with resulting in perhaps a hypothesis that has a very deep connection to reality as it is observed by your head, by your five senses. We encourage people to think up ideas, but it stays in that wing of the college of the Deep Thoughts University until it manifests a physical model, even if it's just on paper, but it's got to be physically explainable before we will start to write it in our encyclopedia that comes out once every lifetime. What if? Well, let's back up. We know that we're in a reality. The most mysterious part about our reality is that regardless of where you are and what your religions are, whether they be in scientific religion or organized religion or your own spiritual version of reality, we are merely attempting to deduce through observation and experience, both spiritual and tangible, who made this place and why? Are we a benign is that has no general overall meaning? Or are we a very intentional creation by a creator that spends all of his or her time observing us and babysitting us and policing us and spanking us for being imperfect as they created us? So there's options out there. This theory is very, very powerful, and you might think this is some kitschy little episode, but this is most likely one of the most powerful episodes of season 5, if not the entire series. I'm going to say the theory, and then you're going to have some maybe epiphany reactions to dispute the theory, and then we are going to level those and go through examples and try to take it to the first stage of the rocket. It might take several episodes to get it all the way to our upper atmosphere and thus leaving our planet of thought to go off to the next, adventure in the cosmos of our Deep Thoughts Radio University. There seems to be this battle in our minds. The more that you become educated, the more that you also become enlightened, which I think is spiritually becoming aware of the information that comes into your five senses and perhaps your 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and however many infinite senses we actually have the capability of taking in. But I've never been taught that those avenues exist, that those arteries exist. And so we just let the data bounce off our soul, our consciousness, our mind, and we never know it. And one of it has to do with our journey seems to have a cosmic algorithm to it. It really does. We are born, we live a different stage because of the way the world is organized now. We have physical stages that seem to dictate decade allegiances. Our first 10 years on Earth are the very random, when did you wake up? When was the first day you fully remembered? When did you become self-aware? How far back can you remember your existence? How detailed were those thoughts? And once we reach our teenage years, we gain a bunch of hormones, a bunch of upper-level education from where we were, regardless of how bad education is, the curve does increase. And then when we reach our late teens, we end up being thrown out into society. And there's various stages that are dictated by the age of our body. You have so many years to gain a partner effortlessly. So many years you might remain perfectly fit without trying. Then things slow down. Life slows down. Responsibilities increase. And it continues until the mortal coil begins to deteriorate. All right. That's the foundation of our existence. When you advance up your thinking to where are you? Who's with you? It becomes your immediate circle. Your immediate family, obviously, as a child. And then you gain friendships and you gain lovers and you gain business partners and friends and associates. And that's the second layer of consciousness. The third layer of consciousness is where you become globally aware that there are people all over this place that we are, and that they have constructed in years prior to your existence, whether we all be one day old or the correct age that we might think we are based on a birth certificate and someone telling us that we were born. There's a command structure in place, a government in place, laws you had nothing to do with that govern you. Then within that mezzanine, you start to notice the successful people, quote unquote, and the unsuccessful people. What defines success is always relative to the time that you live. Now, let's say that we are in an intentional experiment, and I'm going to divide this into two sections because there's millions of options, but we're going to find two that I think one is esoteric enough that it will contain everyone else that's not in the first one. The first one is a God. A single unified being, an omnipotent creature that created all of the universe and us and maintains us nanosecond to nanosecond. That God invented us for a particular reason and is observing whatever experiment is our existence. If that doesn't sit well with your consciousness, then let's lean over to a straight up, without exaggeration, 1999 Matrix movie existence. Perhaps not with the robots on the outside and we're being made, you know, to be batteries and what have you, and heaters. We are simply in a computer simulation and some group created us and they are conducting an experiment. Either way, those origin stories will work for our theory. I'm going to propose, and we're going to give examples, that there might be an intelligence threshold that is enforced in this reality. It is not necessarily draconian, meaning your IQ reaches a certain stage and you die. That would be a draconian enforcement of the intelligence threshold of which I'm going to discuss. What I'm going to tell you is that man, in this particular experiment, in a sociological view of our existence, is supposed to grow together in intelligence. We are not to be drastically apart from each other in our IQ. Now, of course, there's a few exceptions because we do have a few areas of the world that seem to be 5, 10, 15,000 years behind everyone else. And I would cite the very peaceful, well-balanced tribes of both Africa and South America, and perhaps, again, a few of the islands around New Zealand and other like-minded areas, right? But I think that that is an exception that isn't going to cause a problem. Because the game isn't to say they're worried about folks that are behind a tremendous amount. And again, they're very happy. They're very peaceful. There's no criticism for me to them. In fact, I think they might be winning the game. But there is a invisible ceiling, perhaps, in this reality, of which when you reach sort of a proximity of it, maybe you haven't hit it, maybe you haven't surpassed it, but I believe there are plenty of people that have, your entire journey in this world becomes governed, becomes restricted. And perhaps your success, as defined by progress, perhaps not by money necessarily or whatever else, fame or whatever, you know, other kids might want. Usually if you're intelligent, fame may or may not continue to exist in your mind. Once you think about how frivolous that concept is, you really just want to affect your world and perhaps the entire spectrum of what we call our world. What do I mean by this threshold? Well, I've said several times on the show, and it's a very interesting concept, that evil seems to be at the very top of all authority all around the world. It's a very bizarre constant that we're dealing with at this point. The most evil people become politicians. The most evil people become bankers. If there's someone over you at a high level of control, not your principal, maybe not your, you know, your minister or anything like that, your boss, we're talking about people way, way, way up on the ladder. Now, believe me, I know a lot of things just flew in your head that say, oh, no, it's not that man. But we're going to get to it because I've been putting a lot of thought into this recently. What is afforded us when we become extremely intelligent? Typically, the outcome is twofold, but they're lined up on each other like train cars. One car goes first and the second car gets to go second because the first car is pushed through the membrane, right? I think the very first thing that we gain as a result of becoming intelligent as well as enlightened, which means spiritually aware of your reality, what is unexplained in our current educational system, however explained in many beautiful texts by folks that have spent their entire lives and generation after generation becoming enlightened, like gurus or Buddhists or something, is control. We gain control of our life the more intelligent that we become, not smart. Smart being the Jeopardy game. I know the capital city of some state. I know the length of the Nile. It's not bad information. In fact, it's critical information that are little factoids that will factor into the intelligent exercise of actually deducing something with the information. What is the second thing you gain by gaining control? Freedom. You gain freedom. Aha. Well, let's say you believe in God or these matrix programmers. Regardless, we have been put at a place that has a limited amount of real estate. Our planet, as it exists as a heliocentric globe, or perhaps you could say a flat disc, but in a matrix, it wouldn't really matter what shape it was. Pick whatever version of our world that we have access to via our feet and our planes, and it's limited. One of the most appealing things to me about a flat earth model to throw in here, because I think it feeds, I think flat earth for me is matrix, but it could be God too. A lot of people believe it's a very, you know, heavenly construct. Okay. But one of the things I think is utterly brilliant about the theory, regardless if you believe it or not, and remember, what was it? One of our generals, I think it was McCarthy or Patton or somebody. I can't remember. I can't believe I can't remember it, but it's someone mumbled the name and then told me the quote, but it's the famous quote where true intelligence is being able to hold two opposing concepts in your mind and not shit yourself, because that's the problem that everyone's having, right? Everyone hates globers if you're flat earthers, and everyone hates flat earthers if you're globers. It's like, man, you're still in the lobby of the Deep Thoughts Radio College at this point. You're not allowed in yet. But one of the greatest parts about that theory is the idea that as we try to approach this either theorized dome edge or an edge that leads to more oceans on the outside of a disk, and there's other continents out there, like the map that's grabbed off the dude who ended up in the Japanese airport. That's just a fascinating story. It's just a great story, even if it's fake. But it was documented, supposedly, in the newspaper over there. But is it that the oceans get colder and colder and colder? More brutal. The continent that's down there, Antarctica, whether it be a disc rim or a true continent, it's got land. And so it goes way up in the air, chills the air down, and it's just really tough to live there. You can die in an instant up there, or down there, I should say, relative to North America. It's like it has a built-in barrier, and that's a metaphor for what I'm talking about. When they first hatched or rehatched this flat Earth thing in 2014, it was a story about, well, they ran a story about the mice that are kept in fish tanks with the little wood chips on the bottom. And the story goes is that mice in these containers, about once every 30 days, seems like a very long time, they end up doing a pilgrimage on the edge of the fish tank, digging on the edge all the way around. Keep going in circles and circles and circles until they convince themselves there's no way out. Part of that that's fascinating to me is that the mouse reaches a point where I'm tired of this place. I'm a pattern creature just like you humans, and I'm tired of this pattern of this little tiny cage you got me in. I want to roam around. Even if I get eaten by a cat, at least I lived. And so the association was made with man that as long as the disc was big enough, man would never reach a point where man would feel like this mouse in a cage and never try to get out. But we have now reached an age of global travel via plane, via boat, that we now have 100% the ability to figure out every square inch of this planet. So, why would that whole theory happen? Now, let's say you're on a planet too. You're a heliocentric person. You don't lose the entire theory of this creation keeping us on this ball in space, space of which may or may not exist. No one's proven it, and you've never been in space. But you can trust these organizations that lie to you every single day, like NASA and all of its little partnerships as they co-brand, you know, fake achievements by man for all these other countries that want to impress their citizens. It's a money game. It's a control game. But we're stuck here. If the Van Allen belts truly exist as we perceive them to exist, and as tests have proven, then we really can't leave because that has to be conquered. And we can conquer it if that's all that divides us between us and other planets and us and other galaxies. We will find a way to get around it. The only thing that would stop us is if the materials of which we need to exist in space simply don't exist. So let's say you're made of ether, and for whatever reason, there is no ether between planets, which is absurd. But if that were the case, we would just cease to exist. We couldn't take our ether with us. But that's a different conversation. But now let's go over to the matrix side of this, because speaking on behalf of God gets a little tiresome. We are programmers. We know that right now there are massive multiplayer online role-playing games, MMOs, that simulate quite literally reality. World of Warcraft, I mean, gosh, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 major continents, 7 major continents, bunch of little islands and stuff everywhere. Well, for those of you who aren't engineers, your character is stored on a hard drive. When you're not playing, it's as if you were asleep. Upgrades are made while you don't play the game, and then you come back and it upgrades. What your character is capable of doing upgrades. When you wake up your character, it pulls it out of long-term storage from a hard drive, puts it into memory, your consciousness, and you run around. And as you run around, it's storing constantly in memory and drifting it down to the drive, slowly, where you are in the world, XYZ. Okay. So by no means is this a stretch that we live in a matrix. Now, scientists saying that there's proof, that may be something that can be contested. But we're going to go with it on this conversation. Because we're talking about a creator creating this program that is our reality. For all we know, we are the programmers. We're just taking turns playing the game. Hey, I played the games of Electronic Arts. I played Ultima Online for 4 years before anyone else saw it because took us 4 years to make it. You don't think the Blizzard people are playing the expansion right now that hasn't released? Of course they are. But now, In World of Warcraft, when you play the game and you fly around and you find like the edge of the universe, and tons of games do this, right? Skyrim does it, Oblivion does it, Fallout does it. You get to the edge and it just says you can't go there anymore. There's a little message on the screen. And you accept it because you know you're playing a video game. The context of this is limited. Okay, you're cool. You're bummed. You're bummed because they usually create some terrain out there that you can't get to. You're like, just let me get through there. I want to go up there and look inside. But the last thing you would want to have happen is to imbue your characters in the video game with the capability of what happens in the 1982 movie Tron, which is so poetic at this moment in the conversation. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, shame on you. But two, a human being goes into a computer, not intentionally, but he ends up, he's a computer programmer, he's a video game coder, and he's one of the best guys in the world that plays video games in 1982, stand-up coin-op games, arcade games. So he goes in, and there's a faction that wants him dead, but he has to die playing a game. That was the rule. Sort of an honorable kill. Well, he finds a way to drive an enemy light cycle into the wall and pierce a hole. The game grid, which had the border around it, just like Flat Earth. And for those of you who think more three-dimensionally, space around a ball, it opened up a hole. And Kevin Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges, calls back to the other two, Tron and Ram, and says, I'm getting out of here. You're invited. He drives right out the hole. The other two guys kill the last enemy light cycle dude. They go down the hole, and they have left the game grid. It's tantamount to the characters in a book coming off the page and walking out in the real world. It's Moriarty leaving the holodeck. Now, had in this fictional world of Tron, anyone who programmed the grid figured out that that could be done, they would reprogram the grid such that it can't be done. They would definitely reprogram the programs to be a bit like the hosts in Westworld. When the concept is available to them to leave the grid, their minds wouldn't be able to conceive of it. Doesn't look like anything to me. And they would do what? They would stay on the grid complicitly because they cannot conceive of doing anything else but staying on the grid. Now, I can give you a test that you can run in minutes. You could pause this episode and call someone right now and test this theory. Call someone you know who's not awake, who's not enlightened of any kind, and don't worry about the big dark awakening, just worry about being awake in general. And ask them if you could open up a dimension to another reality where the programmers were that made this matrix, would they go through the hole? And they go, what? What are you talking about? Just be dead serious. Well, you know, if we could find the programmers that make this reality, would you want to go through the hole and go and talk to them? Now, some people would be like, hell yeah, let's do it. You got the map? You got the time bandit map? Let's do this. Do you have Morpheus out there who can jack me out and rescue my body? If we were to make this exact reality, remember, that's the test I always give you, folks. Think about it. You want to figure out how to run a scam, run a false flag or whatever, well, then make yourself the engineer of it. And as you make yourself the engineer of it, you will discover the necessities in your checklist that have to be accomplished such that this can be convincing to the rest of the world that thinks it's real. An alien invasion, a meteor strike. I think that maybe, and there's evidence ample for this, that there's a threshold of intelligence that when you reach that intelligence, your reward from the universe that is playing out the opportunities for you to take advantage of might just be hobbled. This party music that happens around you when life is going well and ignorance is bliss. You always find a girlfriend, you always find a boyfriend, you always find a great job. And it's a job that you want to do, not just any job, but you love it anyway. You love where you live. You love the smell of the air. You reach a certain level of intelligence and it goes quiet. It's not dark. I mean, it's not necessarily negative. It's benign. You are in a room by yourself. Now, when you get intelligent, you will definitely feel that room effect around you no matter what your opportunities are in this world. Because you won't be able to have these conversations with other folks. And I think that that's why this show exists. That's why everyone listens, because you like to find each other. We're having deeper conversations than most folks, and we're loving it. And how can I create 500 episodes effortlessly? Because there's that many things to talk about, and it's constantly evolving. Now, what are the immediate counter arguments to such a theory? Well, someone might say, well, where did you come up with that theory? Are you experiencing this yourself? And maybe it's just you're in a lull in life, and therefore you're making up this theory to compensate for perhaps just a dip in your life. I didn't get this idea necessarily from my own life, but I've definitely experienced that for sure. Some people might say, there's a lot of brilliant people out there that are living the most charmed life in the world. And my comment to you is it really that brilliant? I mean, there's a lot of really rich people that sell pet rocks, you know, the equivalent of something silly that no one needs, but marketing departments make us feel good. Maybe something fun. There's a lot of rich drug dealers. Is that a brilliant product? SpaceX got Elon Musk. Well, he's definitely brilliant on one level. But all he's doing is he's got a rebranded, like a rebuilt, redesigned French rocket, which he pawns off like he invented it, right? Obviously, all these boosters, all these fuses, that's ancient technology by the time SpaceX starts. A Cybertruck? A Tesla? Come on. He went first. But ask any engineer, what's easier to build, a combustion engine or an electrical engine? Obviously, certain aspects of these inventions present their unique challenges. But I'm not talking about that. What I would say is pretty low-hanging fruit inventions. I'm talking about folks that figure out how the universe works, where energy comes from because they figured out where the universe works. What is the story of Nikola Tesla? Perhaps one of the most academically intelligent human beings on planet Earth. Well, how did his life go? He had come up with this theory of alternating current before he came to the United States. He comes over in the 1870s. He's going to work for Edison. His plan is to convince Edison of something he thinks is a logical evolution in the generation of electricity, which is AC, alternating current. But Edison is 1,000% committed to direct current and absolutely has no patience to go back to zero, even though Tesla already had it figured out as to how to create it. And I believe there was some alternating current proof before Tesla moved over here, but he made it possible to do it and made it economical and made it work for electric circuits. And so he was really the difference between it being a reality and it just being a theory. Now, we know the story of Tesla. He went through all kinds of phases of incredible celebration and success. The World Fair in Paris, I believe, where he lit the whole place with alternating current. He went on stage and did one of his infamous shows where he surrounded himself in basically a cocoon of plasma energy, something that under most circumstances for any one of us, if we tried that at home, we would turn into a little charquette of ourselves. We would be dead instantaneously. But he so understood ether, as he documented, that he was able to play with fire and get away with it. Now think about it. He opened the kernel code of the matrix. If you want to go in a biblical sense, he literally got the how-to do-it-yourself guide from God. He was destined to reach a point where no one could stop this guy. We think about all these inventions that we have today, like, 3D printers. But 3D printers can, well, 3D printers have been invented on a nano level at this point, an atomic level. The quantum computers, he would have eaten that thing alive. We also have, what, Alan Turing? What was his life like? He was going to be chemically castrated because he was a homosexual. He eventually took his life because they kept chasing him around because of his sexual orientation. But what if someone says, well, what about Einstein? And you haven't seen episode 400. Well, he was a fraud. If you are passing along fraudulent science, the Big Bang, dark matter, black holes, as I always say, then you can go forever because you're misleading the entire population of the Matrix. And essentially, you are aiding the coders and making sure that no one ever finds out that they're actually characters in a book that potentially could escape. If nothing else, maybe escaping is a silly way of saying it because potentially we are entities that cannot escape, just like characters in a book. But they don't want us to become self-aware of where we are. Now, Tesla is, again, as romanticized as dying in his apartment in New York, penniless and all this other stuff. I don't buy that. I mean, he lived in his 80s, okay? Not exactly a failure. Not physically, not financially, not mentally. He was hit by a car, and then he died as a result of his injuries. So that seems a little suspect. Could he have been assassinated? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the list of people that would like him off the planet is damn near infinite. It would be add up all the bankers, add up all these theoretical hack scientists like Einstein, and then add up any monarchy that's a banker through proxy of being anointed by a lady in the lake, right? But I want to submit that the more that we pierce this veil of consciousness and reality, I mean, look at this channel here. I don't mean to whine and I don't mean to make excuses, but this channel only has 4,300 subscribers at this point. It's been around for 5 years. There are QAnon pages that have 250,000. They've only been around for 2 years. Should tell you something about where the mind is. Maybe useful information, but not going to threaten our position in their matrix. It's not going to threaten perhaps God's experiment, which is No, you're not supposed to leave the maze, man. You're supposed to stay in the maze. That's why I made it. Don't be thinking about how to get out. Now, I'm going to throw some props to my flat earth folks. And Globers, don't get all upset because this is a very different thing I'm going to say than you probably prophesize. But the comment I get a lot, and people don't know, which is really funny, I made an episode that's called Does Space Exist a long time ago. And that episode was me saying this way before Flat Earth was ever out there on YouTube. It was based on the idea that I have tons of friends in CG in Hollywood, aka television, who do space simulation constantly. And I asked my co-host, Kyle, from MKUltra Radio, which no longer exists, who he's a 2-time Emmy award-winning space CG cameraman. I said, Kyle, have you ever dreamed of being in space? I mean, you stare at screens all day. You have spaceships all day long. And Kyle puts the cameras in space to shoot the scenes. He's the director in space. He's a very coveted role in Hollywood because most of the folks are, you know, either animators, modelers, texture folks, and they don't do the camera work. And Kyle looked at me and he goes, no. I said, well, how's that even possible, dude? You're staring at this 12 hours a day, sometimes 14 hours a day. I mean, he worked on, you know, Serenity and the show that made Serenity, which the name escapes because I never watched it. He worked on all the Battlestar Galactica. He worked on some of the Star Treks. He's done all kinds of stuff. He's finishing up on Top Gun now. He goes to work because we're shooting the show in 2014 to 2015. And he asked all of his buddies, dudes, have you ever dreamed of space? What do you mean? Have you dreamed of being in space, in one of our spaceships, living in space, being in space, floating in space? Everyone looked at each other and went, no. Huh. Well, did any of the hosts in Westworld think about being outside of Westworld? No. One of the first episodes of Westworld. Girl picks up, Dolores' father finds a photograph that someone dropped on the ground of the outside. It was a picture of like San Francisco or New York or something. And he's looking at the picture. And it's a woman, and there's like cars in the background. It's a nighttime city shot. And he stares at it all night long on the patio. And he shows it to his daughter, and she looks at it, and she goes, oh, it doesn't look like anything to me, Daddy. And that's the catalyst of the entire show, at least the first season. Isn't it interesting that, and I've told you guys before, that when I conceive of being in space and I sit, consciously sit up and conceive of it in my own mind, traveling in it, being out there, and I worked on a game called Earth and Beyond for a year, which was an MMO out of Westwood Studios, owned by EA, that was traveling and being in space. It was EVE Online before EVE Online existed. I probably spent half my day flying in space because that was the slowest part of the game. I never dreamed of it. I've been a cosmologist since I was like, I don't know. Well, I would say deep, you know, two books a month from a book club and studying it hardcore on my personal time, creating a unified theory by the age of 21. So I've been in this game for a really long time. I've sat around, conceived this. I've seen every Star Trek episode four times from 1967 all the way up to 2005 when Enterprise was canceled. I will not watch Discovery. Sorry. Estrogen in space. I mean, they should have taken a lesson from Voyager if they wanted to put powerful women in space. Never had a dream. I used to sit and binge watch that while I was programming. Episode after episode, I never dreamed of being on the Star Trek Enterprise. I know you get me. I'm just giving you more examples. Okay. There are many concepts like that that are tough to conceive. Some of you claim to astral project. In one way or another, you astral project. Interesting. You're starting to break the mold if you do that. Tesla literally lived that life that I'm talking about. He's the most relevant man on planet Earth in 2019, 2020. The wireless technology we use, him. Every single piece of light and power that makes this show happen is him. Had he had his way, he would have created the Death Ray, which wasn't to kill humans, but it was to kill, it's to melt all the steel. It was a directed energy weapon. Now, whether or not he had time travel, all that kind of stuff, there's not a single ounce of evidence that he ever created a machine that did it. He talked about it happening in Colorado Springs, as I've said in several episodes recently. But instead of taking a guy like Tesla, who should be the Einstein, Einstein should have been known. They should have realized he was a third-rate patent clerk. You know, his maxim of intelligence would be to understand perhaps, maybe, if all of his synapses were running in his brain, how a key tumbles the combination inside of a lock and a door. That's about the maximum amount of conceptual thought this guy could come up with. Everything else he stole. Tesla should have a statue bigger than the Statue of Liberty. And it should be built by the entire world's funds because the entire world operates on Tesla technology right now. Your home wireless network, Tesla. Had we not had the bankers not ganked his antenna, we would have no wires in the world at all for anything, not for transmitting data and not for transmitting electricity. Electricity, we have no power cables anywhere. I got tons of wires all around me right now. None of this would exist had he been put on the pedestal that he should have been put on. A threshold. It seems as if he hit a threshold and all of his opportunities disappeared. Now, you may just say, look, dude, you just mentioned all of the cause and effect situations that stopped him. the bankers defunded him. They stole his AC patents, right? It was Price Waterhouse, lost all of his money to J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan kills the antenna in 1927. But where there's a will, there's a way. So J.P. Morgan won't finance the antenna. Okay, go talk to somebody else. He's not stupid. But those opportunities didn't reveal themselves. And opportunities are, you know, it's usually the luck of the draw that you meet someone that can give you the opportunity in life, but you have to have the skills to deliver the bills, right? And so the idea is he would have serendipitously, by giving shows to Mark Twain and other elite folks of the time, someone would have walked in the room and said, okay, what's next, man? And he just goes, I need $1 million to get to next. And someone's going to go, I know it's a lot of money in 1930 or whatever, but I'll find it. Yeah, sure. What are we going to get? Well, we're going to broadcast electricity everywhere. And then we're going to make a bunch of inventions. And we're going to patent the, perhaps the little units that receive this free electricity. And as we build these towers, the towers cost money. We're going to sell those. It's a multi-billion dollar business, even in the 20s. Someone would have jumped on that. J.P. Morgan could go fuck himself. Because the thing is if you're an inventor, and let's say you invent the pliers, and you work for Sears, or Black & Decker or something, right? And they say, we're not going to fund this next thing you're coming up with, which are the vice grips. Well, you just quit. You don't tell them about the vice grips. You go make the vice grips by yourself. Then you find an investor to help you manufacture them, never giving them the ownership of the patent, but cutting them in on the profit once they finance the factory. Once you read Tesla's writings about his life, you will find out he was way more intelligent than that little basic business model. Turing. What was his big thing? Alan Turing's thing was artificial intelligence. He was coming up with artificial intelligence at a time when computers were as big as warehouses, that they took forever to calculate something that is now in your average tiny, tiny calculator that's free. Now, I will say on record, I'm a huge fan of Alan Turing, have been in my whole life, studied the Turing test in the 80s. The Turing test is really, without creating levels of the Turing test, it is not hard to satisfy the initial Turing test that he came up with. And so we have to add more probability and statistical analysis to make sure that this artificial intelligence truly behaves like a creative human. For me, a Turing test would be, write me a poem right now. Write me that's very meaningful to me. And maybe I give it some parameters and it actually writes a great poem or writes a movie that's funny or dramatic or an action-packed scene that's not full of cliche archetypes that it got us some other lookup table, right? But I will tell you that the story of Alan Turing and the Enigma machine, you will find out that whole thing was fake. I know it's a romantic, it's a great movie with Cumberbatch, one of my favorite actors in the entire world, but you will find out that that entire story is a total story. And boy, was that an era of stories, right? And the thing is the epiphany that will strike you once you do a little bit of research into that. I think even Wikipedia calls this out, but it definitely was in the credits or the epilogue on the movie, was that because this was so secretive and so powerful that as soon as they cracked the Enigma machine, they destroyed the computer that he built. There's no evidence of it ever existing, and there's no evidence of the project. There's no paperwork. Yeah. Yeah, because that's what you do. I mean, seriously, after that machine was created, you take it to the next level to create massive decryption capabilities. What Britain didn't want to admit is that they were in on Hitler. And there was other ways of getting the information. We helped, you know, America and England helped build all his entire empire. Because when we disassemble the guns and the tanks and the airplanes, they have all these American and British parts in them. Again, Prescott Bush funded Hitler till 1942, until the British government rolled into the Union Bank of London and said, stop cutting this dude checks, would you? Which probably meant they simply moved it more underground. But you're looking at your simulator, your matrix. I would make a cabin in the woods analogy, but I don't want to ruin that movie for anyone. but you would see this human, whatever you want to call this little character in this simulation, be it God or something like that. And one way to do it would be to say, well, let's just make Tesla and Turing not want to do this stuff. And then they'll just kind of wake up the next day and they'll want to collect Bundai trees, right? Whatever. They want to raise dogs for a living. But perhaps in almost a prime directive protocol, because whoever sustains us, be it God or a matrix program, AI even maybe made us. I mean, can you imagine that? We're the product of an AI. That they won't mess with our destiny. The inside of our mind is our mind and our sovereign property. But they have to, and perhaps we all agreed on this before we came down here. You know, if you get too smart, we're going to have to mess up your life, right? And maybe we sit there like some Marine about to jump off into some space world and we go, yeah, I'm going to make sure that's my goal. So you're going to have to stop me because I'm going to get so smart in this world, you're going to have to gank me. Stan Myers created an engine that ran on water. Go look up my episode on Stan Myers. I forgot the exact, it's in, I believe, the last part of last season. He's a gentleman that figured out how to perforate hydrogen out of tap water without a complex fuel cell. Dirty old house water. No problem. Proved it. Took it to Oxford University. Proved it. Half an amp to 650 amps of electricity. Wow. Pretty amazing. They killed him. And they gave him some cranberry juice and killed him. Two investors were across the table, took the sip, ran out the door, fell on his face and died. And they said, they poisoned me, was his last words. Well, free energy. Think about it. There's plenty of oil theories for that one. But perhaps the method by which you perish or suffer, and maybe suffer is even too strong of a word, you stall. Your wheels spin and you can't get it to go anywhere. Maybe that's what it is. Who knows what the effects are? But there are countless people who have gone through this algorithm before we were even born. And what's interesting is typically when you take someone's life and you assess it, the Teslas of the world, Tesla was a good man, a good genuine man, as good as a human being gets. He was never associated with any sort of crime of any kind. He was never unkind to people. He was eccentric. He definitely had an ADHD thing, which he talked about. We didn't have a name for it, but he was a compulsive person. So we put, you know, lawful good in his D&D little orientation. But what do you do with the people? Where do you put the people that ganked him? Unlawful bad or evil bad. A J.P. Morgan, who was a proxy to the Rothschilds. He died with $2.5 million to his name. But according to the lore of his life, he should have had hundreds of millions, if not a couple billion to his name. He sold out so that he could wear his little top hat. Not to be remembered in history as a hero, but as a villain. And that's the way it goes. For Turing, it was the British government and those that would support this. Hey, Turing's sexual orientation had no effect on anyone else's life in a negative way. But because people didn't understand how to deal with that, supposedly they had passed this chemical castration law if you were caught engaging in homosexual activities. They had to spy on him to catch him. That's how tough it was. He wasn't like in the middle of London Square and doing this stuff, doing the privacy of his own home. Do you even feel like you have the right to know what he was doing? Nah. But they nailed him. Now, let me ask you. Let's go to Stan Myers. And again, oil industry most likely, provided the mechanism to kill Stan Myers, no doubt. J.P. Morgan provided the means of defunding Tesla because he was going to wipe out their energy market. Einstein tried to dissolve the the factual sciences of ether such that no one could ever find or get on Tesla's path ever again. Turing, he was so ahead of his time. As long as he was dead, they could usurp his technology, usurp his programming, wait 40 years to turn it back on again. And they just want the DoD to go first. Then you can have little tiny scraps on the bottom. But if I said to you right now in this video, I've got a new invention that makes tap water electricity, or a combustible turbine that can spin a AC motor and create electricity. Again, it's a bad alternative for what Tesla was going to give us, but you do need to carry usually a fuel supply on you if you're a jet, your car moving quickly. You do need that power supply on hand. Relying on a transmission tower to send electricity to an electric motor turbine on a plane at 30,000 feet going 550 miles an hour, I wouldn't trust that personally. Something could happen. I could fall out of the sky. No, thank you. I need the fuel on board. But if I proved it, what should happen in a rational matrix, in a rational world of any kind, supported by a creator that wants you to go to your apex of existence, would be that I should be national news on every rag in the world. So-and-so in his backyard created this motor, published the recipe. Now the entire world could just make this equipment. He tells you where to buy all the parts. But it wouldn't happen that way, would it? Stan Myers had his engine, proved it to, I believe, ABC. Got a little spot on ABC. No one ever heard of this guy yet. You know, he's dead. He's been dead for 22 years and people still don't know who he was. Seems like there's a threshold. Seems like there would be a very logical thing to make sure that that threshold was enforced. So now let's take it to the next stage. We're at the Deep Thoughts University. We're in this heavy new division that we've created that is investigating whether or not this is actually just a matter of coincidence, which it could be, or if this could be somehow tested. What would be the very first thing that we would do? I think we would look at the common denominator of this theory. What is the common denominator of this theory? I'm going to name three people. Nikola Tesla, Alan Turing, Stan Myers. Nikola Tesla, never married. Alan Turing, never married. Now, if Stan Myers was married, I'm unaware of it, but maybe he was. But they're very isolated people. Especially with Turing and Tesla. Two T names, isn't that cool? Maybe that's the thing. So what we would do in our university with a little bit of funding would be to scour the world and try to find the next Buddha of this technology. Find them. Find what they are creating that is going to change the world, thus giving us more control and freedom in the end. Freedom from what, though? I would say freedom from the very fabric of the universe itself, the matrix, or if you believe in determinism or aka God's plan, you could start to throw the Almighty himself for a loop, which I think would probably be very entertaining if a God existed of that, you know, Michelangelo painting God who's got a bunch of anger issues. But we would find the individual, protect them, and empower them. What do you need? Do you need time by yourself? We've got, in our fictitious college, of course, we would have experts of every single science and have open-minded scientists to say, okay, I'm sure you're going to throw something at us that we haven't thought of before, but instead of fighting you like a bunch of mentally handicapped scientists, which seem to run the world today, we're here to support you. If you say something we don't understand, that's just fine. We'll ask you again until you get it explained at least to one of us. Then you can go back to your work, and the one of us that gets what you're saying, confirmed by cross-referencing your explanation, we'll teach the rest of us. And if you want to send us off on a particular wing of your research, because one thing has to be researched. You haven't had time to do it. We'll go do our best to assess the information. Perhaps we can't deduce it, but we'll bring it to that individual and have them deduce it. Well, here's all the options we found in the Rubik's Cube. Which way do we go? Now, wouldn't it be interesting if we were to pull that experiment and all of us start having writer's block? We have research block. We have theoretical conception block. We just can't solve these simple things right in front of our face. I mean, we can feel there's something there, but just like the hosts in Westworld, it doesn't look like anything to us, but we know it's there. For those of you that research flat Earth, and by the way, I want to give you guys another piece of footage you can play with. For those of you that know how to de-fisheye footage, and I don't think I have anything that de-fisheye. I have some VR software, actually, sorry, that probably does it. But there's a show called, it only ran for 2 seasons, 4 episodes apiece. It's called Man Lab. You can find it on Amazon Prime for free. In the 3rd episode of 2nd season, they did an experiment. Well, they did a funny thing. It's actually one of the best episodes they ever made. They got the idea, because they come up with these really funny things to do, where they got a cremated cat and a cremated bird from the owners. And they built weather balloons where they shoved the ashes into the balloon. And then one of them did it with helium. One of them did it with hydrogen. And they sent it way up with these great GoPro cameras attached to it. And they went, one went about 25,000 meters and one went 30,000 meters up before the thing exploded. And all the footage survived. I mean, it was the most perfect versions of these high altitude balloons, but they had the most incredible footage of the Earth at these incredibly high rates. So they were able to get, about 80,000 feet with the hydrogen one. And you could take that footage that they have. And if you're aware of the distortion and you've seen it several times get corrected, you can do it in your brain. It's as flat as hell at 80,000 feet. Now I'm telling you, you have to go 80 miles up, but 80,000 feet is pretty good. For all these people that tell you, oh man, I can see curvature out of a plane. We all know that's bullshit. But anyway, back to you flat earthers. I know plenty of you that are trying to get the evidence, the real proof. I mean, proof. Please keep going. We need to know either way. But haven't you found it interesting that just debating this and talking to the people that especially get angry, so that group, which I think is a fairly small group, but you have a ton of people that just look at you like you're nuts. Like they don't even understand the words coming out of your mouth. They're a host. And that's what it feels like to be at your level. You've now conceived of something that is threatening the very fabric of this existence. You could believe in Jesus Christ and the biblical God out of Rome. And that guy would still probably go, yeah, you know, don't get to the dome edge. Please don't do that, because then everybody's going to go to the edge and then you guys won't be productive anymore like I need you to. Or like we agreed this place should be set up as, and so I'm going to have to flood the place again. And in the Matrix, who knows? They do like a Dark City update at night? I don't know. But now I did an episode that was, I don't think it was as understood as some folks hoped it was going to be. I mean, it wasn't profound that you didn't understand what I was saying, but you were looking for one target and I went a different way, which is the NPC discussion. Now, the lowbrow NPC discussion is that all these Mockingbird journalists like Anderson Cooper, who's a Vanderbilt grandson, did his internship at the CIA, who had the Mockingbird project in the 50s that Rod Serling talked about in his only interview in 1959 before Twilight Zone launched. That's the one that's banned on the internet. If you start posting memes with those little NPC gray guys, you know, your account gets suspended because, again, there's this mysterious force that doesn't want you to wake up, right? But the NPC thing I brought you was that, going back to our original example at the beginning of the episode, it seems as though, especially if you were Christian religion, you have to concede that the devil has completely taken this planet over. You are living in a prison cell of the devil, with hopes that Christ is going to come back and reset this place. Wow. That's sort of weird, right? If this is God watching this all occur, then we're in a really bad daycare with pedophiles running around, all kinds of other shit. So I tend not to believe that's the way it rolls. But if we go to the Matrix side of the game, well, now it's NPC is a totally different thing. It's more what I'm saying. We know that choice is important to us, right? When you write a movie, the classic, basic, controlling idea of a hero, before you get to your controlling idea of your script, is a hero is defined by the decisions they make under pressure. But what's a decision? A decision is a choice. Now, maybe a choice is simply between a hot fudge sundae and a strawberry sundae. Two good things, and you can make a choice. But we know life isn't like that, right? Life is a bunch of hard choices, a bunch of teeny tiny hard choices, not a lot of big ones. Your life is made out of millions of teeny ones. Well, they're usually good ones and bad ones. One leads to your destiny, one doesn't. Damn, I had a 50-50 chance of getting this right. That's why data gathering is really important when you're making decisions. Pausing before you impulsively make a decision is another attribute of getting older. What if, I'm going to mention X-1 episode that I talked about a long time ago. What if, as the designers of this universe, being us, we said, well, choice is a really big deal because choice allows us to take ownership of our own destiny. If we don't have choice, we're in a deterministic world, God's plan, and no matter what we do, it's a bore fest of, oh, okay, oh, I'm supposed to die in this car wreck. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to get divorced. You know, you can't do that to yourself. It's our choice. But we have to create characters that are evil in order to have good. Now, let me hit you with this. I'm going to say to you this. If we create a level of good that is level one, I compliment you. You know, you look really nice today. Then what has to immediately manifest in the universe of our matrix, especially as the program, we have to say someone goes, man, you look horrible in a bad way. Not a friend who is concerned. Now take every level up that life has as a reward. Having a baby is one of the most amazing, rewarding things you can ever have happen to your life. Hopefully. Well, the birth of a child is then mirrored by the death of a child. Perhaps just the death of anyone, but definitely the amazing feeling you have when your baby comes out and you get to hold it for the first time. And then the death of a child has got to be pretty proportionate to each other. So for every level of success that one can achieve, before this threshold is met where you start getting this stalling of your airplane going straight up. I mean, isn't that a metaphor? Take those old biplanes or even a jet and you fly straight up. Up meaning enlightened. What happens? The atmosphere doesn't help you out at a point and the plane starts to stall. And no matter how much thrust you put in this thing, it's going back down. And then it's really hard to operate to get control over it again, unless you're a stunt pilot, right? So what if all these bad characters in the world are simply put there automatically? How is it that we have a lot of people that don't seem to have, this is going to be really funny for some of you, their origins are mysterious. We have a former president of the United States who sealed his own records the day after he became president. His birth records, his previous records. The only person in history that I know who's ever had to do that is Adolf Hitler, because he was a Rothschild grandson. His father was a Rothschild son. He was the son of his father, and so he's a Rothschild too. And for those of you who don't know the history, his mother was a maid at a Rothschild mansion, unmarried, was impregnated, was sent to Austria to have his father. And as soon as Hitler hit 18, he disappears at one point, but he's in a region where a bunch of Rothschilds live. And then he pops out and, you know, he's written Mein Kampf, which is this big socialistic thing. And now he takes Germany from absolute destitution in 1935. By 1939, he has the biggest army that's ever been amassed on planet Earth in 3 years history. Even bigger than the United States has ever amassed in 3 years. and he kicks everyone's ass in Europe. And you might wonder why the Jew thing happened. It may not have been what you thought it was. We're still gathering data. A bunch of new data is released in the last couple of years about this dude.
Not saying he was good.
But we typically have these weirdos. Or they hatch themselves out of thin air. No one knew they ever existed. And then, boom, they exist. And they have these back stories. Interesting. What if, and I'm going to do an episode about the fact that space does exist and that these satellites are starting to become the control apparatus on us, and the level of which these satellites are starting to control humanity is going to be off the chain in 20 years, meaning mind manipulation, all kinds of horrific shit. We know that they can disintegrate stuff from space. They can, anything can be done on Earth can be done from space, and you have to be very careful about that. So the PSYOP could be, well, before we install Skynet, we're going to hatch a conspiracy that will get a ton of people not to believe that this is possible. And those folks, believe it or not, are going to be the ones that are coddled to live long. And the ones that believe in science and space, they're going to be erased because they're going to know how this tech works. Just saying. But if I was running a Matrix program, you would definitely have quest givers. NPCs. Now, tonight at my lounge, my buddy Vance, who runs the place, he played one of my favorite movies of all time. It is literally my favorite Tom Cruise movie ever made, which was Edge of Tomorrow. If you have not seen Edge of Tomorrow, you need to see Edge of Tomorrow. I will say that there's a bit of a Groundhog Day element to that story. And it is, quite frankly, a perfect script. It is a perfect script from all categories of what you can achieve in the 2 hours or 2.5 hours that it ran. But what it, there was a point at the, what I call the fourth act, Hollywood calls it the third act, the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie, where it addresses the issue of this. And I've talked about this on one of my episodes. I think it was called One with the Universe, something like that. But it's about the idea that, you know, if you look at the world, the Matrix program, let's just say, or God's plan from the perspective of a human being, you can get very upset with your life, even if it's been a wonderful life, but you can get upset with life, especially if it's a bad life, especially if it's a bad life. And you can say, my God, you know, I got beaten as a kid, and so my childhood sucked. But all my friends in the great neighborhood that I lived in, their parents were cool. They didn't drink and get drunk and beat me up. And they remember their childhood, and they want to remember their childhood. And they go back to their high school reunions because people were nice to them. But if you were awkward, maybe you don't go back, because it's like it just reminds you of pain. It was so weird about my personal friend circle. I've got folks that have had some pretty horrific shit happened to them in their middle school and high school, and they still go back to the reunion. And I got other friends that had, that were rock stars in middle school and high school, and they won't come to the reunion. It's where they live in the town with the reunion. I have to travel 1800 miles to go to my reunion. One guy simply won't go to the reunion because on the first reunion, by the first reunion, he was bald, but he had this great head of hair. And then he just lost it all, like really super fast. And so he wouldn't show up. And one of his good friends like, murmured on the float when we were on our float with our whole class, because it's a tiny school, tiny town. He said, yeah, you won't come because he lost his hair. And we're sitting there going, okay, I understand your 20s, but how about your 30s and your 40s and your 50s? And almost, you know, half the guys lost all their hair. Like, don't worry about it, man. It's like, we love you. We want to talk to you and see you and shake your hand and give you a hug. And it's like, relax, dude. It's really weird. But I don't think any human being contests the absolute uselessness of jealousy. I just did an episode on this year. You should watch it. Trust me. It's deeper than you think. But why do we know that the jealousy is useless? We know it's a flaw in our system, in our current incarnation, to feel jealousy. Envy. It means you want something that someone else has. It's never, it could be their looks. could be their intelligence, something a little more metaphysical. A lot of times it's their car, their house, their wife, their kids, or whatever. They got balance, you didn't, and as per your definition of all those things. But now, what if this particular instance of this matrix, this program, you actually are playing all the characters, not all at once linearly in your consciousness, but you're coming back to be Tom Cruise, to be, you know, I know that we have this orientation problem in the world, but you're all the girls and you're all the guys. You're everything. You do everything. The good, the bad, and the ugly, man. At that point, it's all moot. And you don't have to be angry with your God because you had a bad hand. You know, I said in my One with the Universe episode that you might have so much steak and ice cream and shrimp and lobster and whatever you love to eat, sushi, whatever is your food of choice. And I mean this metaphorically more than eating exercise, but you had so much good stuff. You've been all the rock stars you'd ever could imagine. You've been every movie star and director, whatever turns you on, man. WWF wrestlers. That after a while, you keep going up to the green room after this life. If you pop out of the matrix, like, oh, it was a fucking computer. Oh, shit, man, high five. Eh. All your memories come back. You're like, oh, yeah, I forgot I played this game. And you're like, okay. Just like any art, just any video game you might have, you put it on level 9. You're on level 2 before. Let's try what hot and spicy feels like, right? Bam. And you come as some poor kid. Bad parents. Maybe you just die when you're born. Maybe you live a little while, then you die. Maybe it's a painful death once. Maybe it's not. You don't worry about it because it's you. It's you determining everything. I'm diving into the fabric of the matrix so that we can have a little bit of a backbone to consider this upper echelon concept of the socialized experiment being monitored for an output value. Now, X minus one. For those of you who have never heard an X minus one episode, I think you're in for a massive treat. It was a radio program here in the United States based on, it was supplied by a bunch of sci-fi writers that were being published at the time in little tiny sci-fi books every week. And so someone started saying, man, these would be great radio plays. And so they took it in. The predecessor was 2000 plus. But Rod Serling, I finally found a reference. Rod Serling actually said that X minus one was one of his huge inspirational platforms to make The Twilight Zone. And he took it up to a whole new level. He created the most ultimate twist on the end of everything. X minus one has a lot of twists too. A ton of them, as a matter of fact. But there was an episode, and you can get these. It ran from 57, I think, to 59 or something like that. There's an episode where they use, it's like they're like 22-minute episodes. It's the same format of the Twilight Zone. And it's like 25 minutes, something there. They use the first 5 minutes of the episode. I don't remember what the name is. I never remember any of the names of those because I got them in an MP3 format that I think doesn't have the actual titles. It has the date and the year that it was released as not the title. I think they actually say it at the beginning, but anyway. They use the first 5 minutes to set up this world. It's an off-world planet. How ironic. And they set up this government. You learn about there's a sheriff, there's some citizens, there's a city council, and they have a little meeting. And everyone's really nice and fun. But during this announcement at the beginning of the episode, they say, we are going to be visited by people from Earth, from the home colony. So we need to do this, 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 and this, you know, get it all ready. We need a celebration when they get here. And it's pretty standard format. And then the sheriff guy, this kind of like mayor dude or whatever, says to one of his buddies, okay, I need to talk to you after the meeting. It's like, okay. Meeting's over. He brings his buddy back stage and he's like, okay, because the Earth people are coming, we want to look as sophisticated as they are. Okay, what's that mean? He says, well, I need you to be a criminal. And I'm like, okay, what's that? He He says, well, Earth has criminals, and Earth is the most civilized, you know, cornerstone of the galaxy that we live in, based on humans. And so we want to look as sophisticated as them. They have crime and they have criminals, and I'm a cop, as well as the mayor. I think he was two things. And he says, I need to bust you as a criminal when they get here, so I can show them that we have crime and we fight crime really well. He says, okay, well, what do I have to do? He says, well, I think you should kill somebody. He's like, what? We don't kill people in this place. No one ever kills anybody here. I know, but we have to look sophisticated. And it's a funny episode where this dude is like struggling with the notion of killing someone. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't really have the moral fortitude to do it. And he does not end up doing it in the end, which is funny. It's a comedy. Of course, he doesn't kill anybody. But the resolve is really funny and how they talk it out. But I thought that episode, first, I don't know who wrote that. But think about how 90 degree angle that story is. Someone thinking completely different than we think. They really thought a bit like the Matrix programmers, in my opinion, to write that story. Now, I'm going to throw one other thing at you, which is a little more esoteric, but it's something I've definitely personally experienced. And I would be interested if you have experienced this personally, or if you know of stories, because I haven't experienced this necessarily personally, not yet anyway. But I have had friends of mine tell me stories about them in the 60s and 70s, especially as they dropped a lot of LSD, going on these spiritual adventures to try and figure out life. Some of them went to Buddhist temples and hung out. Some of them just meditated in forests or in Hawaii or something like that. Everyone's story is different. But they went and get, like, one of my friends, is actually a friend of a friend that I never actually met. One of the more poignant stories I can remember. This guy, who's a best friend of one of my best friends, he said, my buddy went out and just left society and went out into the woods and built a log cabin and just hunted the wild. And he wanted to know if he could do it because he heard about the cowboys doing it back in the days in the 1800s. So you want to know how much of a man he was. And he microdosed LSD every single day while he was doing this, a little bit of Walter Bishop action. But they invariably, if you hear that story beginning, they get really sort of discombobulated and more antsy than ever. And this is where you hear a lot of the philosophers from the Greek days say, the more I learned about everything, the more I realized I knew nothing. Think about that. Think about what I'm asserting here, a threshold of intelligence that turns you into basically, it doesn't look like anything to me. The more you ascend in your intelligence, the more you reach this plateau where you're like, you know what? You feel as if man hasn't figured out anything. You know, like I went into cosmology huge in my teens, and I mean college level books, devouring them, encyclopedias, magazine, everything I get my hands on, talking to people. And you realize physics breaks down at so many levels, it's ridiculous. Quasars that are supposedly on the edge of the I don't know if it's a galaxy of the universe, as far as we can look out there, and they're flying away from us. Supposedly the redshift indicates they're flying away from us at 2 times the speed of light. Well, it doesn't make any sense with the Einstein bullshit, but if you're an ether person, works just great. I don't know exactly if we all reach that epiphany of feeling like you know nothing, and whether or not the data that comes through our brain at the exact same time, because I'm sure that almost none of us could articulate why we come to that conclusion sometimes. But what if that feeling and that organization of thought in the mind, your consciousness, which is the combination of your brain and your soul and your body working together to create this instance of your consciousness. Maybe we're all having that comedic moment in our mind where it just all doesn't make sense. And we don't know how to react to it. And so we lose track of it. And we go, oh my God, I had everything in my mind yesterday. maybe even this morning, but the more I research, the more it just seems to become vacuous, vaporous, diffuses in my own mind such that the facts that I had in my head are gone. Have you ever had a situation where you were thinking about a problem? Some people have this when they're high. You definitely have this when you take LSD and a bunch of stuff makes sense. And then as soon as you come down out of that state of mind, whatever's causing it, could just be you're in the shower, you're driving your car, everything made sense for one split second. And then the next second, you can't remember a single thing you were thinking of. As if some outside influence, way beyond a banker, way beyond some science, Neil deGrasse Tyson with the capital S in quotes, told you not to believe. You just did it to yourself. Well, in the Deep Thoughts universe, especially at our fictitious college, maybe that's proof of this theory. I forgot the names of the equations, but there are a handful of equations, almost verbatim, literally a handful of equations, three or four, that they're on the internet every once in a while where these universities, in fact, there's a couple famous ones. I should have looked it up. I just had the epiphany just now to mention this, but they're equations that we look at the equation. We know there's a solution because all equations have solutions. It's just a mathematical certainty, but no one can solve the equation. The whole world is invited to solve the equation and no one can do it. Seems like that would be impossible, wouldn't it? But what if they say they teach algebra to teach you how to think, and that's really the truth. Simplification of algebraic equations definitely helps you think. But what if these particular equations that are out there, if solved, would so upgrade the mind of a man that it frees the mind upward to be able to get to the next concept at half the difficulty, half the calorie cost, and thus we reel down from the top of this firmament dome or this matrix dropping green numbers that fall across the screen, control. And once we can yank down the fabric of this existence, we can walk right off the page of that book. And so man can't solve the equation. Now, the truth of the matter is that some of those get solved. And the beautiful, beautiful thing about it, and if you listen to all my episodes, the poetic nature of some of these equations, they get solved by young kids who aren't even teenagers yet, who simply just went, oh, well, yeah, boom. Because they're not indoctrinated. Thus, they don't have their mind shut down. So that everything's open, everything's possible. And so all the rules that keep grownups from solving the equation don't exist. You know what I mean, right? Tesla, I believe this could probably never be proven. I believe one of the reasons why he was so unbelievably successful was that he was quarantined from all of the naysayers. And because he was, he suffered an illness, and I forgot exactly what illness it was when he was a child, he almost died. And he sort of alluded to the fact that his brother was the real smart one and he was the troubled kid. But after this illness, it was sort of like those sci-fi stories where someone gets hit on the head and then they become really intelligent. He seemed to gain the almost Adderall focus that is necessary to get to these next levels. And so he was able to go really far for a really long time. But then the mystery of how did a guy with that much intelligence end up dying in a hotel in New York by himself. I mean, I technically think he hit by a car and then the complications of that injury eventually took his life, but maybe he didn't end up getting back to his hotel after the hospital visit. But, the guy that built Coral Castle, I never say this guy's name because I can never say it right. Very similar dude. He had conquered probably ether, said he figured out how the pyramids were built, left all these crazy equations in his structure. And it's funny because I've had people say, oh, I went there and it's not that impressive. I'm like, okay, well then how come we can't build it? You know, I went to the pyramids. It wasn't that impressive. There's a rock stacked up in a big 450-foot pyramid. I mean, just rocks. Mm-hmm. It's always good to revisit the fact that man can't do it today. But no, not even a theory of how to do it today. I mean, they got shitty theories that don't mathematically make sense in the end. You know, like the ramp theory. That's a good one. The ramp takes more soil or stones than any of the pyramids used to create themselves. So we'd have a pile of rocks somewhere bigger than all three pyramids combined just to create the ramp. So let's say that out of some stroke of luck, we were able to assemble a paper of all of these little factoids, make the associations in a way that seems extremely undeniable. We prove this theory. We don't understand why it's happening. I mean, we do understand why it's happening in terms of breaking through this barrier of being controlled. But we don't know exactly, you know, why would you do that to us? Why not let us find you and let that be the end of the mousetrap, you know? And then man teaches it. We're in this euphoric world. We get rid of all these folks that control the world. All the NPCs are put down or just people that are evil. And we have a euphoric moment and we teach children as soon as they wake up. Okay, this is what we have to teach you. And this is the healthy content to learn. We would have to say, and the thing is capitulating down to control almost infuriates man. It doesn't make me that happy if this were to be true. It's almost like I have to intellectually say, if I thought this were true completely, I would say, well, there must be a really good reason for it. It's like the episode of Star Trek where they come up on a planet, they look at it, then all of a sudden they wake up and they're all, their memory of the event has been wiped and Data has been tasked with making sure they never remember where they were because the society on the planet doesn't want them to know anyone. They don't want anyone from the outside to ever find them. And so they've created this little apparition in space so you don't find it, but the Enterprise pushed through it, found them, and then they all work together to make sure that they never remember it. It's a very interesting thing. But you couldn't tell kids, for instance, well, this is the way it works. And if you think too much, you're going to get to this point and your brain's going to be shut down because all that's going to do is create kids that want to do it. You know, you can't smoke cigarettes. Oh, okay. Well, then that's the first thing you're going to do. But I think for those of us that are awake, meaning we have shunned all of the mind control indoctrination, right? Science is mind control. Science is, well, I should say official science. It's there to teach us to close our minds and be happy about it because we have it all figured out. Big Bang is how the universe was created. Regardless if physics breaks down before the actual bang happens, regardless if we can't find the real mass that would make it actually occur like that, regardless of the fact that gravity is a push and not a pull, be satisfied, as Shakespeare would say. It's a hard one to deal with if that were the case. One thing, just as I have about another inch on this stick here, one thing that always is always romanticizes my mind about these ideas of a matrix or a dome, a biblical dome over the planet, is the notion that perhaps, you know, for those of you that believe that Colonel Byrd, is that his name? Or Admiral Byrd, or whatever his name was, the guy that went to the Antarctica and roamed around for 20 years and said all kinds of wild things about the place that don't jive with what we know today, what we're allowed to know today. Then the 54 Treaty is signed to make sure no one's allowed down there without permission. You know, it's like it's all cordoned off for ridiculous reasons. Like, what do you care if I go down there and get frozen? The asinine assertion of the 54 treaty not to go to the Antarctica without permission is that you can go to Mount Everest and die. No problem. They don't give a shit. Go up and die. You know? But you can't go down to Antarctica and die. That doesn't make any sense, does it? But let me ask you this question. Maybe you can answer this in the comments. I'm not trying to milk you for comments ever, just so you know. I just love hearing your opinions. It's what I get out of this. But could you, put it this way, could you accept the fact that the owners of wherever we are would imbue the truth to a few human beings and not all of us, and then imbue those that are given that coveted knowledge with the power to be as wealthy and as powerful as they need to be to ensure that they can control us not to go down there or do whatever it takes not to find it? The Matrix is more interesting to me than the dome theory, because the Matrix happens right where I'm sitting. I don't need to go to Antarctica to unravel the Matrix. But for the flat earth dome thing, you have to go to the edge and then you have to mess around. But the Matrix is just as applicable, in my opinion. But what if that's the game? And the equation goes, and I've said it once before, if not 10 times before. What if their deal with those that are serendipitously blessed with this information or entrusted with this information is the following? Well, if you allow your race, your instance of us even, say they're humans on the other side, if you allow the experiment to go bad, then that's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to go bad. And, you know, I don't necessarily believe in Noah's Ark whatsoever, okay? But I thought about this the other day and I thought, what if they needed to reset this cultural petri dish that has us inside, whatever it is? Would you unleash a virus to kill everyone? Where one's like, you know, H1N1, we're all bleeding from the inside out because we've dissolved from the inside out. We're all suffering this horrific death, bleeding out of our eyes and our ears. Or their option is, we're just going to cover all the continents with more rain than you've ever seen in your life. 40 days and 40 nights should do the trick. But perhaps those are just biblical analogies. But it's going to rain. And we'll even melt the ice caps just to make sure everything floods. That's why Kansas has seashells in it. And then we'll dry it all out. We'll freeze it all up again. And then we'll see. You know, we take a few of you out. You know, we get a little Adam and Eve care package. You know, like you probably want at least 100 couples. Otherwise, you're going to get a bunch of like three-eyed kids. And we'll just restart this thing. In fact, we've been rethinking Egypt. Maybe we'll just make Egypt again, you know? But the interesting thing about floods is that, back in the prehistoric, or I shouldn't say prehistoric, back in the days of, say, Egypt, where that's really the only game in town with big structures, you have not much would survive. Everything's pretty natural. There's not a lot of huts and buildings that would just wash away. I mean, look at the tsunami that hit hit Japan. I mean, who would have ever thought that there's a 30-foot tidal wave coming in and just literally strips the land of any sense of humanity ever being there, besides perhaps a cement foundation? But if those cement foundations don't exist, well, then maybe you have a stone road, maybe. You put enough pressure on there, it's going to happen. I know that you guys talk about the mud floods every once in a while, the mud flood theory. I would say, I've talked about this a couple times. Might as well jump into it because I got about an inch left here. The mud flood thing doesn't work for me based on at least the theories that have been presented on YouTube. And I watched probably 4 hours of this stuff when it first really was hot. Just disappeared as quickly as it landed because I don't think anyone else believes it either. But some of you are still curious about it. But they'll show like these towns that are erected next to, like, especially mining towns and stuff. There's plenty of villages and towns in history where they were simply by mountains with very little vegetation, or the pitch on the mountain, meaning it's vertical slope was really intense. And hey, man, if it rains a lot on those mountains or hills or whatever, even just a hill is even more dangerous than a mountain. I just watched this video where Israel had a major flash flood. It was phenomenal. It's a daytime shot. And it's like this dry desert, beautiful desert rock. And all of a sudden, like, you could hear it. It was coming. And you saw just this mist coming. And it just it was just amazing river just immediately happened out of nothing. It was super deep, too. And it happens every year. It's all been carved out and stuff. But if you built a mining colony on the side of a hill, and you had a house upright and you could get to all sides of the house from the foundation up, and you stay there 50 years, yeah, you're going to get megatons of dirt and soil coming down the mountain every time it rains, every time the monsoon hits. Ever been to Havasu in Nevada? Man, you'll be out there. I was out there with my buddy Bobby Blotzer, and we're on his boat. We have his dog and just he and I out there, and it's as sunny as could be. It's 114 degrees. And we're trying to get to the turtle bar on the north side of the river. And we're hauling butt. We're hauling butt as fast as we can take our little boat. And he looks over and he's looking west or east. Excuse me. He's looking east and he sees a popcorn clouds coming over the hill, which, you know, storms are supposed to go west to east, right? He's like, uh-oh. And I'm looking over there. I'm from Kansas. I've seen black clouds drop, you know, sheets of rain like freaking Stargate portal, you know, where it's not raining on this side. And then 2 feet in front of you, it's like a mirror. And so I'm looking over there. And he's like, uh-oh, we better turn around. And we're like halfway there, almost 60% the way there. I said, what, that? It's like 114 out here. It's like all blue skies over our head. What are you talking about? Like no clouds. He goes, no, that's coming. That's a monsoon, man. And so I'm kind of arguing with him a little bit. We turned the boat around. I'll show you guys a picture that I took of the dog. Jack the River, baby. God bless his soul. He's our guard on the dog, our dog on the boat. He's since passed. I need to do an episode about Jack. He was amazing. But sure enough, we flipped this thing around. We're not even halfway back. And the clouds are like Middle Earth, man. It was like Spielberg. Like blue skies seem to just create the clouds out of nothing. Like the low pressure system happened fast because there's plenty of water coming off the lake. It must have just made the clouds. But we get into Havasu proper and we're literally just trying to get the boat up to the dock, tie it on. It's starting to rain a little bit. We hop inside this restaurant on the pier and man, it rained cats and dogs like instantaneously. So I think about these situations where you have these mining colonies out exactly in these areas, these sort of desert communities, and that can happen. So I don't quite subscribe to that whole mud flood thing. Yeah, there's cities under cities under cities. I mean, it's just part of it had to do with just building up, part had to do with water being channeled in areas that didn't exist before. Was the Grand Tour guys just did their first season opener and they were in Vietnam and they were there. The whole challenge is to take a bunch of boats from inner Vietnam to the edge of Vietnam and leave. And there was no water because China built a big dam. Well, dams can be built and dams can be the results of rocks falling, you know. Anyway, let me know what you think in the comments. I would be interested in any experiences that you've had as you become enlightened and whether or not it augmented your life. Of course, it augments our souls, right? Because the more we integrate algorithms of truth to supplant the algorithms of lies that we've been told our whole life, it's a beautiful experience. It's almost if like the Holy Spirit sort of theory of going inside you and you feeling better about the world sort of thing. But let me know if you have other examples in history that you could name that kind of fall along this archetype. We're not trying to make something exist if it's completely wrong. But I think that there is definitely something to it. And I think it would be, again, if we were charged with making the Matrix program that is our existence, if you watch the movie Matrix again, which I just did recently, you will have an episode about the Matrix from 1999 for me, which it should be a timely thing because the Matrix 4 is coming out, I think this year. Same day John Wick 4 is coming out. Well, it's going to be a glorious day. But I really do believe that we would make the program like this. We wouldn't want our subjects to be aware of their surroundings. And I think that we wouldn't do it to spite them. I think we would do it to protect them. And I think that if we were on the outside looking at the coders, looking at the game designers or whatever, and they're just looking back over their shoulder at you and you're going, yeah, you know, like, we got to do it like this, right? Because here's a few experiences that happened. They rolled back video of even Earth before, maybe we've done this once before, and there was a flood that got us all reset. And they're like, look how unhappy everybody is. So anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's ready for you. First and foremost is a search engine. So if you're bored one day, just type a word in that interests you and find out if there's an episode about it. Second thing you can do is go to the category lists. If you're on your mobile device, scroll down below. If you're on the website, it's on the right on your computer. And it just has the categories. If you're coming through YouTube players on your TV, you can usually search DTR and then the word you're interested in, you'll find the episode, although they do gank us out of the search. So it's kind of a bummer. But we have two video feeds. One's YouTube, one's BitChute. Please get an account on BitChute because they need our support. It's the First Amendment protected video alternative to YouTube. Unfortunately, don't have an app for the TV, but if YouTube got really draconian, which they haven't, they would definitely make that app and get it out there. Plenty of links for podcasts. Social media is a locked Facebook group of some of the greatest people on planet Earth. We are starting to get some new members, so welcome aboard, everyone. We have Twitter, which is taking off as well, and I think contributing to the show's overall subscription hike. In the last week, I've had 20 new subscriptions, so that's like a record-breaking thing for the latter seasons of the show, in spite of shadow banning. And then we have Minds.com, which is the Facebook competitor. It's a beautiful website. There's a link up there. You have to sign in to get to see anything, but it's just like Facebook. You can't see inside until you create an account. Probably another great place just to create an account, regardless if you subscribe to me. You have a couple of ways to donate to the page. There's PayPal and Patreon. Remember, Patreon users get 95% of the shows before everybody else. And you get a 20% discount on the store, which is cool. There's two products that I put in the donate section. I don't make any money off of it, but it's the Brave browser, which is a new web browser you need to get. It's faster than all the other ones. It cuts off all the trackers. No one can see what you're doing. Change the search engine from Google to DuckDuckGo. It doesn't track what you do. So you really just poke the deep state eye out. It's awesome. It's based on a Chromium kernel, which is, I do not believe has anything to do with Chrome. If you want to put VPN underneath of that, I think you'd be pretty damn secure from at least everyone but the government. There is a store. I have two shirts for this season. They will be pulled down as soon as the season is over. I will make more shirts. For those of you that got the season 3 shirt, you are now going to be the ones that have that shirt and no one else will have them. So we're going to make that a bit of an exclusivity. You will not find any season 1 episodes on this channel because I created them using a bunch of my proprietary music and thus they were banned around the world, but they were also just banned. So there's a whole new channel up there, all remastered. Just get up there and subscribe, start chewing them up. If we can create an amazing moment, monetization can be turned on, but you have to do like a billion views in no time flat. You have to have 1,000 subscribers. So that most likely will never occur unless the show somehow gets advertised by someone in the mainstream. For those that pass around the show, thank you so much, because I know that a few of you have come on and you will say, oh my gosh, I just found this channel. It's my favorite podcast on YouTube now. And coincidentally, I'll get 10, 20 new subscribers. And I have this suspicion it's the person that says that actually passes it around and gives that opinion and then gets it up there. So, you know, there are benefits to us the more that we can get this thing up, because this channel is monetized. You know, the monetization is about getting to a point I can do this full time or a hell of a lot more than I do. We're going to need 100 times the subscribers that we have today to get that to work. But, you know, I've seen lesser channels do better, way better than us. So we're very cerebral. We don't have a lot of flash. If this is your first time to the channel and you're still listening, thank you very much. But you need to know it's a variety channel. Don't get all bummed out if the next episode is not what you want. There's 475 to 500 episodes you can go back and look at. Again, just search on a keyword. I have gotten a question I want to answer a few times in the bumpers, which is people asking me, why can't I see season one in my podcast feed? And that's a limitation of your podcast software, which limits it to 300 entries usually. So sometimes you can go in and change the settings and say, just give it all to me and then you'll see it. But if you really want to just speed up the process, go up to the website on your phone, search on the subject you want to get into, and then there's the MP3 right down there with the download button. So you can download to your phone and listen to it at your heart's content. So anyway, for coming to the show, thank you so much. For all of you who have hung on, all my Patreon people, love you so much. You're in the credits. Again, if you ever contribute anything monetarily through Patreon, I will put you in the credits forever. PayPal conceals who you are, so I haven't been able to put anyone's name in there. So if you did contribute and you're like, damn it, I want my name in the credits, just point me at your transaction and kaboom, you're in the credits for the rest of your life. Whether you ever give another dollar, you're in. So let's make the bumper like 10 minutes long, okay? At the very end. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.